This is Wins and Losses with Clay Travis. Clay talks with the most entertaining people in sports, entertainment, and business. Now, here's Clay Travis.
Welcome in, Wins and Losses. It's been a little while, been crazy busy with everything in the OutKick universe, but there's a brand new Netflix comedy special up from Nate Bargatze. I watched it last week with my wife. We loved it. We were laughing a lot, and I thought I need to get Nate back on the Wins and Losses program because I'm actually fascinated how you film a comedy special in the middle of COVID. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about his sports fandom and this conversation in general, I think you will love. It's Wins and Losses. If you like this one, you'll like a lot more of them as well. So dive in. Here is comedian Nate Bargatze with me on Wins and Losses. Joined now by Nate Bargatze. He's got a great Netflix comedy special that is up, just debuted a couple of weeks ago. I watched it this time last week, I think, and immediately texted you, Nate, and I said, man, that was really, really good. I think there's a lot of people out there who need laughter right now, Certainly more than ever. So first of all, thanks for getting up early and hanging out with us. But I was so fascinated by the way that this was filmed outdoors in L.A. There's helicopters flying over the top of it. What was the process like? So before you're telling any jokes and anything else, like, how was this set up? How long did it take to tape? Tell me how you go about filming a Netflix special like this.
Well, appreciate it, buddy. I got your text. This one was like much different because obviously it was outside and we had the audience, 100 people, audience had to get COVID tested. They ought to wear masks. So it was very difficult. The people that got the tickets, very funny, had a guy email me and he was like, yo, what's up with all the hoops to get these tickets? I was like, dude, there's a pandemic. I wanted to tell him, like, well, there's a big global pandemic that the Earth is dealing with. That's part of it. But it was tough. The timing of it is what's the hardest part because I can't hear them laugh because we're outside. They got masks on, and it's just laughter kind of just goes in the air. And then also you can't see their faces, so you can't see them smiling. So you're like up there like, dude, they might hate this. And you're just kind of going off like, I know these jokes. I've done them before. They've worked. And so you're just hoping they're working. But so we my set's like timed out. So I timed it out. It was like 64 minutes. I was doing these drive-in movie theater dates. And I had it timed out. And the first show, we taped two shows for a special. And then first show I did 43 minutes. It was that much was energy was like gone. With just the outside and the mask and like we had helicopters flying over and like all that kind of chaos. Like, so it's like crazy to see. I mean, I've had it happen, but you know, you can fluctuate 10, 15 minutes, 10 minutes maybe with no, like if a crowd's like crowds can be fast laughter, like they laugh quick and stop or whatever, but it was pretty wild to go that. So then usually when you take two shows, they tell you, I mean, every special I've done, they always go, we got it. First show, we're good. Don't worry about it. Have fun on the second show. And then this show, they were like, yeah, we do not have it. So this second show is very important because you have to do an hour.
So that's actually really – so were they back-to-back? Like how much time is between the two? Is it the same day? Are you performing same
– hour. Yeah. Hour and a half.
And it's a different crowd.
Yeah, you usually get everything from one show. So when you see a special, it is most likely from one show, and you just tape two just to be sure. Something like this happens, or who knows. And then they, you know, maybe occasionally be like, I like the joke on the first show better. The reaction was better. I said it better. You know, so usually, but you have like an hour and a half. But I mean, right when I got off,
you nailed the second one.
The second one, I think you could tell. I mean, it was, you know, you never feel, I don't know, when you tape them, you never feel, specials are not, it's not the same as a regular show. Like, it's, I don't know, there's just the pressure of, like, you got to get it. And this was such a weird kind of thing. And so you don't, like, when you get done, you're like, all right, I think that was good. Like, you're like, I don't know. The last one I felt really good about, the Tennessee kid, That one I did. Like I was running that material. That's the thing too. I mean, I had probably 50 more theater dates I would have ran this hour in before the special. And I mean, luckily I got to do those drive-ins and do it. And I had an hour built before the special. Before COVID happened, I was kind of already like had an hour ready, but I mean, normally you would have, those reps are super important because you just, you tighten jokes up, you find little things here and there, you maybe add a little bit and then you're doing these theater shows. And so normally you just kind of pick a stop on your theater tour and you're like, we're filming, like we were going to film in Minneapolis was the plan. And then, everything happened. COVID and then all that stuff. And so that was like gone. And then I didn't even think I was going to get a special, but then they said they could do it at Universal Studios. And so I was like, you know what? I wanted to be done with this material. You get kind of tired of your jokes and you kind of want to come up with some new stuff. And so I was like, well, no one's putting anything out either. So I was like, maybe I'll stand at, you know, you can stand alone kind of because there's not really much coming out. And so, and there we go.
So, there's so many interesting things to unpack there. So how long to you is a period of time that you're capable or want to do the same joke, right? Like, so this is all new material. To you, what's the lifespan of quote unquote new material? Like how long, let's pretend COVID didn't happen and you were just touring as a comedian doing this act, this 1 hour-ish act. How long would you tour with that act? Like what's a normal range? And how many acts have you gone through what you would say in your comedy career so far?
I mean, hours. So I've had 2 hour specials, half hour on Netflix. That's 2.5 on Netflix, 2.5 hours, an hour on Comedy Central, 3.5 hours, which that one aired the same night of the Mayweather Pacquiao fight. No one saw it.
Great scheduling. Did you even watch it or were you watching Mayweather Pacquiao?
No, I watched the fight. Yeah. I didn't watch it. I mean, I told them, and they were like, I think we're fine. I don't think anybody's going to watch it. It's like, people have been waiting this fight for 30 years. I mean, this is like the biggest fight on earth.
By the way, like, this is funny, too, because you're a big sports fan, and we're talking to Nate Bargatze. So I've had to deal with this when I sell books, right, like to write about sports or whatever else. So my first book was Dixieland Delight, going around to all 12 SEC football stadiums. And the people who buy books, by and large, know nothing about sports. Right. And so I was talking to all the publishers, most of them, and the agents, and they're like, so tell me about this SEC football. Is it a big thing? And I'm like, yeah, you know, like there's a lot of people who are college football fans. And they're like, do you think there's a market out there? I was like, yeah, I do. You know, like, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of people every Saturday go to the stadiums to watch. And they're like, really? Like, you know, it's like I'm talking to, it's like I'm in a zoo and I'm talking about, like, it's just so insane, like the people you're trying to sell to. And the other example I'll give you is right after I wrote Dixieland Delight, I was like, hey, I've got this great idea. I want to do a book about the NFL draft and about how much interest there is. I'm like, it's the link, you know, the linchpin, the sort of the connective tissue, the point between when guys go from college to the NFL. They train for the combine. I'm going to train for the combine alongside of these guys. I'm going to tell the story. And I went into all these New York City publishers, and they're like, yeah, we don't think there's enough interest in the NFL draft. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, every day there's a new mock draft that comes out. Like, we could do NFL draft talk. I think I got a text the other day and somebody was like, hey, you know, Cowherd's done mock drafts for like 65 consecutive days on his radio show because there's so much interest in it. But so I'm curious on that for the comedy world because you're a big sports fan. But I can see you being like, hey, you know, it's head to head with Mayweather Pacquiao. Like, that's not a good overlap for me. And they're like, oh, no. No, everybody's going to still watch. I can totally see the comedy world and the entertainment world being a little bit insular like that too, where they don't really know about like the overlap with sports.
I did Fallon to, well, like I've done Fallon a bunch, but like that night when I was on Fallon, like to promote it, I had Fallon. I told him that, and I was like, hey, you should say that. And I just started telling people that because I was like, I have no hope of them watching this. So like at least tell them to DVR it.
Yeah.
And be like, we're all watching the fight. Like, this Netflix special came out during the first week. Justice League got dropped and then March Madness, but it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
So people can know that they can watch it whenever they want to go watch it.
Right.
The drop date doesn't really matter as much. You know, I mean, most time Netflix, too, to promote your specials, they don't want you promoting until after it's already on. Like,
yeah.
So you won't do – I mean, they have algorithms down to everything, but you won't – like, you sit down with them and they tell you, like, when we're going to start doing stuff. And, I mean, they got it – they're like, we think 30 days – now I think they're doing 30 days before they do 30 days before the special,
yeah,
to lead up to it, and then a bunch after the special, because it's like you want people to be like, hey, go watch it now. Like, you can see it right this, you know, because more people tend to do that stuff. You know, another random thing that might find interesting, there's a billboard in Cool Springs. I got a billboard right on 65. That billboard is basically there so I see it. Like, I've always heard that they do this. So
yeah, that is phenomenal.
I don't know how much they have billboards in New York and L.A.
Yes.
And L.A., I think, is more, you know, that's more of the, for the voting for Emmys and Grammys, like that kind of stuff. And, like, just to be in the Hollywood so those people see it. So they do it with Judd Apatow. They did one of his shows. They put one near his house, like, on the way to work. Because then he sees it, and he's like, all right, look at them.
They're promoting it.
Like,
yeah,
They're promoting it. It's, like, straight up. And I swear this one's, like, straight up from me to Legends Golf Course. Like, it knows, they know I go to my golf course.
And that then, is,
so I
that is
see
awesome.
It, like, every day. And I'm like, yeah, look at this. They're giving it, you know.
That's amazing. Also, that's the story, like, on Hollywood Boulevard or whatever, like, the most expensive billboards in the world are right there because they want the industry to know, like, hey, this event's going on. And also, the people who are affiliated with it, right? Like, to be able to have I haven't seen your billboard. I mean, I drive 65 South in Nashville on a regular basis.
I think it's north. Look. You see it north.
Oh, you see it coming north.
So
that is great.
It's awesome that they do it. Like, that. Yeah, I mean, Netflix is amazing. But, yeah, you're right about them promoting stuff. I mean, they don't know. They don't, man, when you talk to people that don't know sports, like when I had it when I moved to New York and you would talk about sports and they're like, oh, I don't know, like, is Rutgers playing? You're like, Rutgers? Like, are you crazy? Like, you think, like, that's what matters? And you sit there and that's when I could always see the disconnect of when I lived in New York and L.A. Because, A, when you say you're from the South, they just are like, what are y'all doing down there? You know, like, they do not think that anything exists out of their, like, blocks that they live on, and they can't fathom that there's human beings wandering around, and whatever human beings they think are wandering around, it's not the best. They think it's the worst people alive, and yet they all you have to talk to them all the time. You're like, it's like football. You're like, well, there's a big game tonight. Like, who? And you're like, Alabama, LSU, and they're like, what is that? You're like, I don't know. You would dream to have those ratings. I can tell you that it would change your life. Your dumb sitcom even had a Vandy, Kentucky Saturday noon ratings. You would kill yourself for something like that.
It is funny. Like, so obviously with Outkick, we serve by, like, we have a lot of listeners all over the country, right? But our base, as you know, starting off was SEC football. And now we're up to whatever, 10 million people a month or plus will come to Outkick. And sometimes we talk to people on the East and West Coast, and they're like, well, that's a lot of people. Yeah, I was like, yeah, people care a lot. I mean, it turns out, you know, like, college football is a big deal, you know? And I know for Big Ten fans and SEC fans, they kind of get it. But really, for East Coast, like, they don't have any – I mean, your point on Rutgers, like, Boston College, whatever, like, nobody really cares. Syracuse, there's not a lot of teams there. And then on the West Coast, you know, USC, UCLA, if they're good, people care. But it's not the same level of, like, intensity. I'm going to go shoot somebody if my team loses, which happens pretty much every year, for instance, in the Iron Bowl. We're talking to Nate Pargatze. So I'm curious – so in your special – you've been doing stand-up comedy for a long time. You have been 18 years. You have been a lot of times a guy who gets up that nobody knows. As a comedian, how does it change when people know you and have an expectation for you when you come on the stage beforehand? And I'll give you an example from your act that I was watching. You say at some point, like, everybody, you know, something along the lines of, like, your dad was a magician, for people who don't know. But people who have watched your comedy now know that. And you don't have to do the exposition of, hey, you know, my dad used to do this, X, Y, and Z. You start to assume that your audience has some knowledge about your life. Is that better or worse from a comedian perspective to know that the people who are watching you are in some way invested with the trajectory of your life such that they come in with preconceived notions about you as opposed to you just, well, I'm assuming it's way easier, but you've had to battle to get there. I'm wondering how different that feels.
Yeah, it's definitely a different thing, and you never – you can get to the point more. You know, it's like nice to be like, I can say in the special, I can say my dad's a magician. It's not about him being, I mean, it's a story with him being a magician, but it's not like I'm telling you about some growing up like that or something. It definitely helps. You know, I just talked to someone about it, like where it was, you know, when you start coming, these people are going to these theaters and like you're seeing these, there's a line and people are buying food and it's like a couple thousand people and they're there to see you. You do have a moment of like you feel like you like look around, you're like, who are they? Who's here tonight?
Yeah.
Like you just, because you can't imagine it's you.
Yeah.
And you're like, what are these and people doing? You know, and that's, but it's like that, it's a weird thing to switch over. Seinfeld once said, like, if he could ever go back, the only thing that he misses before, he obviously loves, he's got a lot of money, his life is great, but the one thing he does miss is performing when the audience doesn't know you. And
yeah,
you do miss that. I mean, I can still go up. If I, you know, pop up at Zany's in Nashville and no one knows I'm coming, and they're not there for me, they're just there for a regular show. I mean, people do know who I am, but they, you know, some people might not. And
yeah,
or if you do a corporate show, sometimes you could be there and they don't know you. And when you can get those people that don't know you, it's so fun because they have no idea what they're in for. And you get to, like, you get, that's the excitement you have when people don't know you. You're like, you get to prove that you're funny to these people. The thing you got to switch to when people start coming is you then got to, A, it does get easier. That's why, like, sometimes I always start with new jokes because the jokes that they're going to give you more grace at the
yeah,
beginning, because they're like just excited that you're there, and like, you know, and then you got to get into some good stuff. But you have to always remind yourself to, I mean, stay, you know, to know that you're not getting these laughs for no reason. Like, you're just sitting, you know, you're getting laughs just because we're like, we love you. Like Colin Quinn said, and like, there's a documentary comedian, like Jack Nicholson, like he can get off stage and they get on stage, they give him 5 minutes of grace, and then they'd be like, all right, Jack, tell some jokes or get out of here. Like,
yeah.
And that's how an audience feels. Like, they're, you know, I could go back to the same cities and probably do this. I've got new jokes now, but if I had the same jokes, they would handle it maybe once, maybe twice. And then if you come back a third time and you got the same act, I mean, it's over. Like, it's, you know, and they're not coming back. Like, they're going to be like, oh, I saw him, you know. After the second time, they'd be like, let's go. You got to, that's why, and you got to start, keep building a new act and keep growing.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We're talking to Nate Bargatze, a great comic. He's got a Netflix special. I encourage you guys to check it out. Went up a couple of weeks ago. How much has your life been, like, everybody's life changed because of COVID, right? Like, everybody had something in their life that was substantially different. But for a comedian who makes his living being out on the road and sort of being able to test jokes in front of normal audiences inside of comedy clubs, that had to be just a screeching halt suddenly. And then you're home all the time. And like, my wife is like, why don't you leave more often? You know, like, I haven't been on the road very much for the past year. I used to travel a lot more. What was your life like as a comedian during COVID compared to what it was like February of last year compared to like April of last year? Had to be like two different worlds.
Yeah, I was in New Jersey the day we canceled the show, and we canceled like 3 hours before the show. Everything was getting canceled. The guy didn't want to cancel. People were like already showing up a little bit, and it was like this weird. I didn't know if people were gonna get their money back. Like if I canceled, or if I didn't cancel, and say some people were like, I don't feel safe. Like, they're not gonna get their money back because we did the show. And so it was like you got kind of caught in like in this kind of weird thing. What's funny is they had a show the night before with Tony Bennett, and the guy's like, we had Tony Bennett here. So I was like, yeah, you definitely shouldn't have had that show. Like, he shouldn't have been, you know, it's like we knew very early that like older people were having
90 year old,
like,
a 90 year old shouldn't have been
up. Yeah. Him should definitely not have been. You should have canceled that show. Like, my show might have been okay, or probably would have been okay. This show, you definitely shouldn't have had. But I basically drove the bus. We have a bus, and so we just drove straight back to Nashville, and then just everything stopped, and no one knew, and everything's getting pushed. You know, the same stuff. We're like, we think we're going to get open. We're very bottom, at the bottom rung of, like, things that they care about opening comedians.
Yeah, right.
And so you got to kind of look at sports, and that was what we're all looking at, to, like, see what sports are doing. If sports open back up, then we would get to open back up. I had to do a bunch of drive-in shows, and that was kind of a different thing. But that was pretty cool, like, to do those, just to get a – you know, you can't hear the crowd. But I mean, I had a show in Chicago. It was 500 cars. And they would fly when you walk on stage. 500 cars flashing their lights and honking their horns at you. I mean, it's something that I'll remember for the rest of my life. Like, it was such a unique experience, and you could tell that these people were so. This was in the summer. They were just so happy to get out. It's kind of fall, and that day in Chicago was like 45 degrees. It was raining, and like the people were so happy to be out. They just loved it, and it was like nice to get to do that. We watched, you know, that one drive-in let us watch Halloween. By herself, like, he just played it.
Oh, that's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, you got to do, it was like just trying to be like, all right, we're going to do some weird things that we never would have got to do. But I mean, it was tough. I golfed a lot, and then, you know, I mean, just trying to keep yourself somewhat busy. You know, started a podcast. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Have a kid from another marriage. No, I don't. But what if I just keep going? Like, yeah, you know, wife's pretty upset about that, but I was like, it's COVID. What do you want me to do? Like,
we're talking to Nate Bariazzi. All right, so you are a big Vanderbilt sports fan. Where would you be on the optimism scale? New football coach, Clark Lee, Jerry Stackhouse, potentially, I don't know, UNC Roy Williams decided to step down yesterday. Where are you on the optimism scale for Vanderbilt athletics right now? Obviously, the baseball team is number one in the nation, and Tim Quinn's got
golf is good, too. Women's
golf
bowling.
Is going. Women's bowling, dominant.
Dominant. We're a problem, Williams Bowling. You don't even come to the matches. I don't know what they're called, but I feel great, dude. Like, I am thrilled right now. They just announced that $300 million that they're throwing into the stadium.
And you donated $30 million yourself, right? I mean, I want to give you credit
for
that.
Everything I've ever made, dude. It's we're broke now.
But Vanderbilt Athletics is going to be pretty good. Yeah, yeah. Your wife's happy.
I was like, can we get backs in the stadium? I'll give you $30 million. I love it, dude. It's the most excited I've been. As a Vandy fan, this happens to us a lot. But that new chancellor is Chancellor and Candace Lee. They just seem like they're doing stuff. Like, they're actually, like, saying they're doing these things. I love the Clark Lee hire. I love it so much. I love a coaching search. I think the NFL draft is super fun, and I think a coaching search is about as fun.
Yeah.
But he was the one that, you know, we had some flashy ones, flashy, you know, names that you would think you could get. But he played there. He went to NBA. I'm way on board with what the hire of him, and the fact that they're doing all that stuff. I mean, I feel terrific about it. Basketball, we got to figure out. You know, I don't know if Stackhouse left for North Carolina, I wouldn't be upset. He's not been here long. I wouldn't be upset about it. I would, you know, I'd want to hopefully find someone else, and we get moving forward. Even if he stays, you know, it's good too. I don't know the recruiting and the Vanderbilt basketball, how great that is, but as far as football and everything else, I'm thrilled. I can't wait. We get to hopefully beat Tennessee. I like the guy y'all's hired. I think that's good.
I'm not very optimistic about Tennessee athletics. We're talking to Nate Bariazzi. And, I mean, really, I was looking at the list. You know, everybody talks about Minnesota as a state that has had a lot of failure. No, we've never really won anything since 1998 in the state of Tennessee. I mean, the Preds got to the Stanley Cup Finals. Titans have been, you know, a couple of years ago in the AFC Championship game. Memphis, the Grizzlies have been to the Western Conference Finals one year. Tennessee football has just fallen off the radar. I mean, I guess you can say Vanderbilt baseball, but pro championships or major college championships in basketball or football just haven't happened. So we got a lot of losing that's been going on, and I'm just not optimistic it's going to change. I feel like this is my lot in life.
Yeah. It's like real these teams that these people – what's his face? What's the guy in Miami? ESPN guy that was, I think you had problems with
Dan
him.
Levitard, yeah,
yeah.
He decided he did.
So
yeah.
I remember him talking about Miami, like he was crying when Jeter like went there, the Marlins, and you're like, dude, y'all won. That stuff makes me furious when you're like, I've won nothing, dude.
Yes.
Like,
as a Vanderbilt fan,
won the league for a year, and they won a World Series. The Heat win. The Hurricanes have been dominant. I know they haven't won in a while, but you're like, and then he's like upset because they have a bad Marlins year. You're like, come on, dude. Like,
Marlins have won two World Series. The Heat have won three championships, I think, if I'm thinking of the first one with Wade and then the second one with Wade and LeBron, or second and third. Obviously, the Hurricanes have been dominant for a long time. You don't have to go that far up. You know, the Bucks have won two. I mean, the state of Florida, the University of Florida has won two in college football, at least. Maybe it's three. I can't even keep up. And they've won two in college basketball. Like, yeah, it's hard to feel that bad for those guys. By the way, you like to go to sporting events. In fact, I think one of the last times I saw you at a sporting event was maybe back in 2019. I think the start of the Vanderbilt season, if I remember correctly. I think Vanderbilt was playing Georgia at that game.
Mm-hmm.
How has your life changed as a guy who used to be able to go, I would bet, anonymously to sporting events because you're just a fan of Vanderbilt athletics or whatever sporting event you're going to? And I know when we were at that tailgate, there were a lot of people coming up like, hey, I love the special. The power of Netflix is real. And now that you got multiple specials on there, like, you have to get approached all the time in a way that never happened for the first, I don't know, 12 or 13 years of your career, I would bet.
Yeah, man, I was standing with you at an SEC game, so there's a big reason everybody's noticing. But it does happen. It happens more. You know, I get recognized here in Nashville. It's not anything crazy. Like, I have a joke about it where I was like, it's not a problem at all. And like, usually when I do get recognized and someone takes pictures, once they leave, I then have to explain who I am to like 10 people. They're just like, who are you? Why did they do that? Like,
yeah.
And I have to go, I'm a comedian. Like, and they're like, I don't know who you are. And I had a guy at the Nashville airport. He just asked me, he goes, is there any money in that? Like, he might do it. Like, he was like that's how little he thought of who I was. He's like, you think I should try it? They're like, yeah, dude. I mean, get out there. So yeah, it does happen, and it happens a lot more here. It's not like it's some chaotic thing, but it's a weird. It's where, you know, because you always get some people don't say approach you, but then you get a message later like, I saw you out tonight, and that stuff kind of gets at you in your head, not in a bad way, but you start thinking like, you know, you don't want to act like you're just like some, like you're Brad Pitt walking in, everybody notices you. But you do think like, someone couldn't be knowing me and they're just being polite and not saying anything. And so, you know, you can't, there's a lot of stuff that goes, well, you're like, you can't just lose it on a waiter or something like that. Like, you gotta just somewhat just kind of be under the radar, tip more than normal.
Way more. That's the first thing that I started doing when you start doing radio, and you know this, like in the Nashville area, a lot of people would know my radio voice before I was doing television and everything else. And they would be like, oh, you know, they just kind of perk up because they're like, you're standing in line at Wendy's or something and you order a Frosty. And like the people are like, oh, I'm used to hearing that voice, right? Like, it's on my radio all the time. And the thing I noticed was like every waiter and waitress was like a sports talk radio listener in Nashville. And so I was like, you're going to accuse me of a lot of things. Nobody's ever going to be like, Clay Travis cut me short on tipping, right? Like, so, you know, all the time, like big tipping in that, like that was sort of a crazy aspect. But I do think that's a sort of a wild thing. And I would imagine it's a unique thing because you can kind of track the trajectory of your career over that in many ways.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, you can tell it is. The second Netflix special is a big deal. Like, it's like a lot of people can get one, or, you know, a lot of people in comedy, But then doing the second one and you have
I don't know, that guy at the airport, he might have three by now if he got into it.
He can do whatever he wants, dude. I mean, that guy's crushing it.
But like, so it means that your first one killed it. Did you get an opportunity to do a second? And Netflix has all the data and the analytics and everything else. So if they come back to you, they're like, hey, we love what we saw from this last one.
Yeah, yeah. They don't really tell you, which that is the big thing. The big story with it was with Stranger Things. They wanted to renegotiate, and the actors did, and they were like, it's doing good, but it's not great.
Yeah.
And then their agents are like, well, these kids can't walk outside.
Yeah, right.
So we know something.
Yeah,
and Netflix kind of has that leverage.
Yeah.
Like to be like, Netflix knows when you switch from your iPad to go to your TV, if you watch it on your phone. I mean, do they have everything? They know
so how
long
negotiations how do negotiations go with Netflix? Like, I know how negotiations go for radio or TV or whatever. Like, we don't have anything in the Netflix world, but presumably you have your agent. Does Netflix come in and they're like, hey, we'll pay you X, and then you're like, oh, we want what? Like, or is it just like such a good thing for a comedian to be on Netflix that you're like, well, I know I'm gonna make way more money because so many people are going to see it, right? That you're going to immediately sell out everywhere else. In other words, I'm not really aware. Like, if you release an album and you're an artist, a music album, they don't make that much money. My understanding is off the album itself. It's all the concerts and everything else. And, you know, the radio airplay is basically an advertisement. Is that similar in comedy? I mean, I know, like, you know, Dave Chappelle is going to get $20 million or whatever the heck Dave Chappelle gets. And there's
really 60.
60. Oh my God.
For
three. So that's great.
And he's bringing a lot to it. I mean, that's what it's not too far off from what you do. Is like you got to get yourself big enough, which has been through Netflix, but you get yourself big that your worth to them is like you have an audience that you're bringing. So then the negotiating is like, well, I could go to HBO or I'll go to wherever. And like, so that's the leverage that you use. But they usually do a thing where they have like a first look deal. So like you would sign, you do a thing. Sometimes they do two special deals. If you get up to that Chappelle level and that kind of thing, you know, you can get the multi special deal. But they would give you, and then they usually have a first look or something for your next special. So, like, a lot of times it's something like that. So, whatever you do, like that first stand ups I ever did, I was doing a half hour. That was like, you know, I mean, it paid great, but it was more than I've made. It was like I knew that I needed to be in the Netflix community.
You were like, betting on yourself. Like, this is going to help my career if they're distributing my content.
Yeah, no, yeah. People that choose stuff for money, you don't need to choose stuff for money until it's time to choose stuff for money. Like, but it's like just get in that world, because there was people that wouldn't want to do that half hour because it was like, the money wasn't good or something. You're like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I need to get in front of those people. Like, that's the audience that they have is enormous, and for stand up, it's the number one place that you can go to. And then you did the next special, and then this one, and then they usually do a thing where when I do my next one, I think I have to tell them first and like give them the option to buy it, or they got to say no to it. And then if they say no to it, then I can go somewhere else. So you're kind of under a contract. I mean, I guess if you wanted to get out of it, I don't know why you would. Netflix is, there's nothing, no one's like them as far as for almost any. They're borderline going to start taking over TV.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask, do you want to do something? Like, so you've done the stand-up specials with Netflix, and we're talking to Nate Bargatze. Does any part of you want to do I'll give you an example. I think it was Netflix that has like WWE shows, right? Like they do sitcoms. In other words, my kids love like all these little sitcoms that they do. Do you think they'll start to do like more and more of traditional old school sitcoms? Like, would you have any interest in a multi-camera?
Yeah.
Like, I know you've done pilots before, like everybody who is in, you know, I think I've done like 40 Fox Sports pilots and they all get like shelved or whatever over the year.
Yeah.
But is that have some appeal to you as well? Like, obviously traditional stand-up has worked well, but like a multi-camera sitcom style show?
Yeah, yeah, it does. I mean, and I always try to do it. I mean, I always look at it as like, I got stand-up as my what I want to do for the rest of my life. Stand-up is you can kind of become big off stand-up now, like you used to not be able to.
Yeah.
But now with Netflix and specials, I mean, you can kind of really build a pretty big audience with that. I do want to do a show, and I am trying right now. I'm trying again. I've been told no 100 times, and
yeah.
So
we're
club. In a world of it's all no's. That's the thing people get into any kind of like entertainment or like this or probably even regular life. You're basically told no all the time.
Yes,
and
that's
then
right.
There's just some yeses, and then but it's you got to get through all the no's, and so it's I'll hopefully get to do it, and I would like to do it. But yeah, they started doing The Crew, which is Kevin James' show. That's a multicam on Netflix.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that feels like a King of Queens show. And
yeah.
So, like, once you start seeing that and you're like, this is a show that me and my wife can watch and with our daughter there. And, like, you know, it's not this in-depth. Like, you know, first for a while, Netflix is, like, all, like, it's like a murder documentary. And you're like, dude, I'm just trying to eat, like, some spaghetti.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be, like, you know, like, just invested in this, like, case. And so that stuff gets so, like, just overpowering. But now they're doing that, like, The Crew, some animated stuff. And, I mean, obviously a lot of that. And so, I mean, I think they're going to be, I mean, that'll just be where people go. Like, you know, it already is. But, you know, where you're not even, you're just looking at Netflix. You're like, all right, what do you want? We can watch. They have everything. So, yeah, I do want to do it again, whether it's multicam or single cam. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out now. But that route of a TV show, I do want to do that. I want to shoot it, because I want to do it in Miami. I want to shoot it in Nashville.
Yeah, and I've asked before, but I'll ask you now on live radio. You'll let me, like, I played myself in Blue Mountain State, but you'll give me a spoken line at some point in one of the episodes. Will you agree to
that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't get canceled, dude, I'll give you whatever, you know.
I mean, it could happen at any moment, let's be honest. I mean, this might be the last show that I ever do in radio. I mean, that has to be a little bit scary, by the way, for comedians, too, because you guys used to be, like, you could say anything in a comedy club back in the day before people had their phones, and now, like, you got to be kind of cringing every now and then when you, because you know all these guys, right? And you know, and the girls that end up trending on Twitter for some joke that they made, you know, 5 years ago that's now circling back up or whatever else. I mean, that's a brave new world, right? Or guy gets, I can't even remember, you get on SNL, which is what everybody wanted to do forever, and then like everybody does a deep dive into every joke that somebody's ever made in the history of their career.
Yeah,
and
it's like one guy does a deep dive.
Yeah, it's just one dude
sure
a lot of times. That's right. Yeah.
That guy, Shane Gillis, is the real deal. He's an unbelievable comedian. Like, he, to me, would be like the next kind of Louis C.K. Like, when he came to Nashville, and I know him, and I went and watched him. He was the one in the SNL thing that he got hired, and then that someone went and found, like, all these dumb old podcasts that he's done that had no views. No
right.
one listened to him. It's just a new comic saying, trying to be
and
funny.
You've got to learn. You've got to learn your craft, right? Like, in everybody who ends up successful in anything. Like, I'm sure the first time that you work on a car, if you're a mechanic, if you went back and looked at it, like after you become the best mechanic in the city, you'd be like, man, I really screwed up when I was trying to learn how to fix that car the first time, right?
And
it's like any other skill.
You're doing stuff in weird situations. I mean, look, I'm a clean comedian, but I mean, I've cursed and joked because I was doing a show at 2 a.m. to drunks yelling at me.
Yes.
So if you just showed that one thing, I'd be like, I was trying to survive, dude. Like, I was like, I'm up there. Like, what do you, I was like, you know, I was like, you're just doing whatever you have to do when you're first starting out. Yeah, that kid will be fine though. Like, he's the real deal as a comedian. And I think, I hope that it's people are going to – I mean, comics just got to, like, it's like quit apologizing. Just do whatever your act is. I mean, I don't really do anything because I'm not, like, you know, the one to say. But you do get nervous because you're like, I don't know, what if someone takes something a different way or take it wrong? Or, if they want to highlight you, they can highlight you.
Right.
So, and look, people want to do that. I don't necessarily do that. It's not, like, my thing. I don't really care. So it's like whatever, you know, but everybody should be able to do whatever they want to do.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We're talking to Nate Bargatze. Last question for you. And by the way, this has ended up being basically the entire second hour of the show. So I appreciate you rolling through.
Yeah.
But is there someone in the world of sports that has seen your comedy special or seen your act and you found out that they are a fan and you've been like, I can't believe that insert person here is aware that I exist and or even more than that, enjoyed my show? Has that moment happened for you? Can be a coach, can be a player, can be somebody associated with athletics.
The one that was struck by Dale Murphy.
Oh, Dale Murphy. That is
phenomenal. Yeah, Dale Murphy was at my show. And so Dale Murphy was, when I was a kid, you know, he would always sweep three sweeps before he would bat. And so when I played Little League Baseball, I always did that. Yeah. And I always did it because of Dale Murphy. And I had no idea. And he lives in Utah, and I was in Utah, and then he, like, tweeted something that he was at the show. And, I mean, it was unbelievable just because he was my favorite baseball player, I'm like you. We're the same age. The strike affected me with baseball. I don't watch it like I did because it was like I was at that right age when they stopped playing.
You're a teenager, and you start to find new things. That's what happened to me, too. But
unbelievable.
Dale Murphy is phenomenal.
Dale Murphy, Bob Horner. Bob Horner, I don't know if he likes
me. I remember Bob Horner. He had four home runs in a game back in the day for the Braves, I remember. Well, like out of nowhere. He's like a blonde-haired guy, right? Kind of portly. My grandfather, my granddad in Chattanooga, Tennessee, was a monster Atlanta Braves fan, so he would watch every game on TBS. And what's interesting is, I know you've got a daughter, my 10-year-old son has turned into a huge Braves fan. So it's on every night in our house. And so I've kind of circled back in through baseball because of him. And I'm like, you know, this is kind of fun. It takes you back to when you were a kid and like you were 10 or 11 years old and you had that same affinity for the sport.
Yeah. It's great now. I've always just followed Vandy guys now. Mike Yastrzemski and like Sonny Gray and so I just always in Price, like you just always Tony Kemp's in Houston. Like I just end up it's actually pretty great. I've learned to not have like a crazy loyalty. It's just like you get to watch sports and be like, I just want this to be a good game. I want to root for these players that I like.
It's like Kenny Chesney being friends with every SEC football coach because they all like his music, and you're like, wait, you grew up a Tennessee fan? He's like, yeah, but I like Steve Spurrier too. He's an awesome dude. And you know, like you see him pictured at like every stadium, you know, hanging out in different gear, and initially you're like, that's stupid, but then you're like, well, when you actually meet some of these guys, they're actually pretty good dudes, and you're like, you root for them maybe more than you root for a team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier. It makes your life a lot easier. It makes it like you can sit and enjoy a game. You're not miserable. I mean, once you get older, too, you just start realizing that you get busy, and then you're like, dude, I can't be like crying over the Titans or something. Like you're like, I gotta get it together. You know?
Well, I'll tell you what I think about now sometimes. Like, I will sit and watch a game, and I'll be like Tennessee, for instance, in basketball, this kid, Gaines is his name, he's 19, 20 years old, whatever he is, missed two free throws in the SEC basketball tournament against Alabama, and I felt awful for him because potentially Tennessee would have pulled off the upset, been in the SEC championship game. They haven't won the SEC basketball tournament in my entire life as a fan, so I'm 41. Like, that's a long time to just have a lot of losses every year. I'm like, this is the year, and they lose or whatever. But now I sit around, I'm like, it would be such a jerk move for me to tweet something bad about these kids because I have a way bigger audience oftentimes than they do. It's like, you know, it's interesting the transition from somebody who just roots for a team to like, man, if I said something like, I can't believe he missed that, how did he choke like that, miss those free throws or whatever on Twitter, it would be like, I would feel bad because it's like I'm picking on him, right? Because I've got a big audience. Yeah. And it's crazy transition in your mind to go from like a casual fan to or a big fan, but now you've got a bigger audience. And it's like more people are going to see your criticism of that play than might have been watching that play almost, right? Like it's a weird kind of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you're old enough to be their dad.
That's also true.
You're like,
yes.
I could have technically had them. You're like, I can't. This is a, you know, once you get to our age, you realize how young 18 is.
Oh, yeah.
And then how young 20 is and 25. And you're like, dude, these are kids.
That's like my argument has been. And this is, you could probably build an entire segment about this, but you can't wear a jersey of someone that is younger than you. right? Like that, you know, like once you're like, if I see guys walking around and you're like, you're 45 year old and you're wearing like a 19 year old's jersey, it's like, that's kind of humiliating right now for people like us. Like I could wear a throwback Bo Jackson jersey, right? Like my argument is they have to be older than me, unless it's your own kid or, you know, some sort of scenario like that, right? If one of my kids ever was good enough to play, you know, I'd wear his jersey or whatever to go sit in the crowd, maybe, maybe.
I would like if you didn't. You go, I'm not. You go, I can't. I've had this. You stick this hard, fast rule you have. And
well,
he's like, Dad, but just wear my jersey. And you're like, I made
a
real big point about you can't,
Then people will call me out for being a hypocrite. And so, but it's funny, like, as you age, you start to dress more like the coach. Like I wear, like when I go to a SEC football game now, coach's polo, right? Like you're not trying too hard, but you're not doing too much. Like the coaches, you know, in a college football game, stand on the sideline in the coach's polo, and that's like your look, right? Like I'm pretty much going to be coach's polo for the next 20 years or so because I'm roughly the age of the coaches now. And I think that's the way you have to dress for an SEC football game. And
I could leave early too.
Yeah.
Like if
someone,
like, I mean, not necessarily like I want to, like, but it's like you start understanding some of that beaten traffic thing. You're like, you know, it makes
so
more sense than it ever did. You're
so
like, I get out of here.
I went to one football game this year. It was Alabama against Tennessee. And I was like, I don't think I can sit through this entire game. Like, it's just an absolute drubbing, you know? And I used to be like the never leave early. But if you get stuck in that, that was one of the good things about probably the only good thing about COVID was, I've got season tickets to the Titans. Man, I could pull up, park right by the stadium. You know, I get my kids, I could walk in, nobody was sitting in front of them blocking their view, we could go get easy concessions, and then as soon as the game's over, it takes 5 minutes to get to your car, drive right onto the interstate. Like I was like, man, you know, this one-third stadium capacity thing is not necessarily awful from a fan perspective.
Oh, not at all. Yeah, that's almost what they should do, is like, if they could ever do it, it's like, just make that experience, like, focus on that leaving. You know, not being like, I mean, you think about airlines.
Yeah.
Like, if they just spread the seat, you're like, just how much better everybody's life would be. Just
I don't understand why at the airlines they don't have double exits, right? They have the extra exit thing that they can open in the back. I've always wondered, why don't they have two different, like, little, whatever those things are called, like the conveyor belt thing that they pull up so you can walk off? It seems like it would be wildly more efficient to have two than one.
It's because they're all against this, man, and they don't want us to all have a good time.
I don't understand it. Like every time I'm standing there, like sweating, you know, because they turn off the air, and you're like in the back of the plane, which I've been a lot, and I'm just like, this is just awful. And your kids are throwing a fit, and you're like, there's no way for me to get off. I'm like, why wouldn't they just open the back and have a double exit strategy?
You should just yell that next time and go, hey, there's a door back here.
Yeah, do you remember when that guy, like, opened it and just got a beer and slid off? Do you remember that, like, flight attendant was just like, I'm doing this, and, like, deployed the emergency exit and just slid off the back with a blue moon? I think it was, like, drinking a beer. It was like, that's a
just
good
the nightmare you set off to is so funny. To when that, like, for something like that to happen, it's like 2 seconds for that sled to pop out, and then you're like, I mean, it's like 10 hours to get it back. It's like, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like they have to
fold
shut down the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that is phenomenal. Nate, when's your next, by the way, when's your next comedy like event? Where are you going to be performing next? Do you have one scheduled?
You know what? My Miami Improv, the end of May, I've got a bunch of club dates. All of them are sold out. Miami, not so much. Miami's a tough market, so
not killer for you.
Not yet. I'm not. I'll definitely get it performed there in front of people that don't know me. That's like end of May, and then the theater tour is starting. Hopefully, starting back up in August is the plan.
That's awesome. Well, we appreciate all the time. I know how busy you are. Congrats on the special. Encourage everybody to check it out, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Yeah, man. Anytime.